The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome back to the program today George Dawes Greene. Hello, George.
Hello, Vic. Good to talk to you again.
George, I was just kind of getting into this author interviewing thing back in 1995, and you were out on book tour for your second novel, The Juror, and you came out to Yellow Springs, and you did an interview, and here you are again 27 years later. This is our third interview. You just published your new novel, The Kingdoms of Savannah. Am I pronouncing that right, Savannah?
That's correct, Savannah, Georgia.
Okay. And I had you on for your previous novel back in 2009. That was Ravens. And I seem to recall back then hearing something somewhere about how you were working on a book about Savannah, and I'm guessing this is the same book.
Yes, but it has some of the roots of the same book. I was thinking about a novel about Savannah, but then that kind of went away for a while, and I was working on something else. And then I just had this idea for a particular character, and then that led to a particular story. This all happened about 2 years ago, and then all of a sudden I was flying into it. But I have cannibalized the bits of that earlier novel.
Okay. I remember reading... You were interviewed somewhere back in 2009 for Ravens, and I wrote myself some notes back then, which I dug out, and I remember that whoever wrote this piece had said something like, well, gosh, you're not going to have to wait another 14 years for George's new book, and this writer was right because it was only 13 years.
That's correct. See, I'm getting faster and faster. I'm hoping that the next one will be in 12 years.
Okay. This character...
Oh, we'll see. You know, I might just surprise you. I might just suddenly be back here in a year or two, and then you'd be shocked.
Well, that's how you started off, George. You put out two books in 2 years.
I know I can do it. I get very distracted. I get distracted by... Well, first, you know, I went out and started The Moth.
Uh-huh.
And so that took a lot of time.
George, you mentioned that you... Imagine this character, and I'm going to guess maybe the character was Morgana?
Yes, it was Morgana.
Okay.
I just began to think about this very powerful woman in Savannah who is completely self-created. And actually, it's interesting. It came from when I was 19, I was a therapist for a while, you know, at one of these crisis centers down in Brunswick, Georgia. And I remember getting these calls from this young woman, maybe she was 17, who I never got to know, but she'd call and she was able to do these incredible voices. She lived way out in the country, but she could do any sort of voice and create any sort of character. And I had thought about her over the years and wondered whatever happened to this girl in this small town. And gosh, the years passed, and I suddenly realized, boy, she'd be, 60 now.
Mm.
And then I just imagined that she had come and created herself as a Savannian, including the non-rhotic accent, all the, you know, that lovely, soft Savannah accent.
Mm.
And she just blew up in my mind and sort of got combined with a little bit of my mother, Inez, and my great-grandmother, Big Inez, and various cousins named Inez. They were all sort of whirling around in there. And so I came up with the idea of a woman who is recently a widow, very wealthy woman in Savannah, who realizes that her husband has always owned a detective agency, and now she's inherited it, and a rather strange but very well-heeled client approaches her. And while she thinks he's probably guilty, she still is tempted to take the case, and she has this big dysfunctional family that she gathers to help her with the case. They're all kind of fed up with her because she's manipulative and mean, but she's also brilliant. And so she gets involved in this case, which is, you know, just this murder case, but it also has deep roots in Savannah's history. So I get to talk about all of Savannah and see it all through the eyes of Morgana and her big dysfunctional family.
You mentioned Brunswick. That was your hometown, which is just a little distance from Savannah. I understand you used to go down to Savannah to see your relatives. And was Big Inez still living, or did you communicate with her through the spiritual realm?
It is the latter. We used to drive up. Mom would drive me up to Savannah. Maybe I was about 11 or 12. And she'd put on this big flowery hat, and we'd drive up in her barge-like Chevrolet Bel Air up Route 17 to Savannah, and then meet with all the Inezes, all these cousins. Now, Big Inez was gone, and I actually never met her, but Mom loved seances, so we'd sit in front of this thing. Have you ever heard of a tip table?
No.
Well, it was like the Ouija board.
Mm.
But it's before the Ouija board. It was like the Ouija board was high tech compared to the tip table, which is just a three-legged table. And you all sit around it and put your pinkies together with your hands resting lightly on the table. And then the table will start to move and it will wrap out messages. And so we'd get messages from Big Inez. And that, I mean, Savannah has always been just filled with this sort of ghostly presence, some of which I love. I love Savannah, but some of which is really troubling. Because a lot of the ghosts are ghosts of, you know, these past societies that, I actually got overwhelmed with that sort of Confederate vamping, people remembering the old days with fondness. So I stuck my thumb out when I was 15 years old. I dropped out of high school and put my thumb out and went hitchhiking to New York City. And I didn't come back for years. But I've always loved Savannah, part of me. I mean, it's first of all, it's a gorgeous city. And filled with artists, creative people, and strange characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it has such a sweet ambience that, I'm still in love with it, even though it has its dark side.
You mentioned ghosts, and one of the ghosts who haunts your story, and apparently Savannah, was a guy named Charles Augustus Lafayette Lamar. I had never heard of this monster.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it amazing that... Well, I think that the real stories of the cause of the Civil War are honestly have been repressed for years and years. They're beginning to come out. Lamar was what they call a fire eater. He was, as you say, an absolute monster and a bully and a tyrant. In the 1850s, he was the richest man in Savannah. His father had been rich. He was a spoiled bully, and he wanted to reestablish the Atlantic slave trade, which had been discontinued, 50 years before. But he thought, oh, we need more slaves. And he had lots and lots of followers. And what he began to do was to provoke the New York Times with a series of really horrific, provocative acts that got the New York Times exercised. And every time the New York Times would come out with an editorial against Lamar, Lamar would scream, false news, And his followers would feel victimized and energized. And he was actually growing quite powerful. And he and the other fire eaters really arranged for the defeat of the Democratic candidate, Stephen Douglas, in the 1860 election. They wanted the abolitionist, Abraham Lincoln, to win. And they arranged for that to happen because they split the Democratic Party. And they did it because they thought, okay, the South will secede. We'll then go and conquer Brazil and Mexico and form this new empire of slavery. And it, you know, it seems like such a, you know, an, you know, I mean, it's just a demented dream, but he nearly pulled it off. He was one of the Savannah characters that I write about in this book.
Why does this sound eerily familiar?
I don't know. You know, sometimes the avatars of these monsters come back to Earth and haunt us. It never stops, does it?
No. My guest is George Dawes Green. We're talking about his new novel, The Kingdoms of Savannah, on the Book Nook at 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners. You've been quoted, quoting Walker Percy, who said, "The South produces better literature because we lost."
Well, yeah, that's completely true. I mean, it is the darkness of the Savannah of the Southern narrative that produces great literature. The heart of Southern Gothic is this disconnect between what people think about the, what Southerners think about themselves. They think they are descended from Norman nobility, and they think that they are virtuous and chivalrous. And really, everything is founded upon this this pure evil system of slavery and rape. I mean, there's so much darkness. And that conflict and contrast and the necessity over the years for the narrative to suppress the truth. You know, this is what I grew up with. It's what most Savannians grew up with, is we grew up with kind of one narrative, and then there's the truth, and that is what the sparks between those two poles that are really, that can create moving literature.
Your first novel in 1994, The Caveman's Valentine, featured a character who was essentially homeless. He lived in a cave. And you have a lot of homeless characters in this story. This is such a powerful account of homelessness, and I had no idea that Savannah is such an epicenter of homelessness.
Well, it is. There's about 40 encampments that ring the city. And there are encampments, you know, they all have a different style. There are encampments for families. There are encampments for alcoholics. There's an encampment for that's all black. And there are many, many mixed race encampments. And there's even an encampment for white supremacists, which is a really dangerous place that I've never been to, but it's been pointed out to me several times. So there's a couple of thousand people living in these encampments. You know, it sounds completely grim, and it is grim in many ways, but many of the people who are living in the encampments are actually, they're living there by choice. You know, there are people who have decided they just don't want follow that rat race anymore and spend all your time, you know, making your rent and your utilities. And it's just, there's just folks who think, I want to go be with my friends. So there's a bit of that. Then there are also people who are, challenged and for all sorts of reasons. There are people who are living in just simply by no choice of their own, they've lost their jobs. So it's a big mix. But it is, you know, a lot of the unhoused people come into the city during the day and, you know, gather in the squares. And they sometimes know the wealthy people. They sometimes work for them. So there are connections between these two realms of Savannah. And I think the Kingdom of Savannah is about all the different realms of Savannah, all the different worlds. And I'm just fascinated by that. In this little town, there are so many different neighborhoods, and they all interact with each other. And my novel is really about Morgana and her children, who each of her children is connected with one of the realms of Savannah, so can bring Morgana, you know, information from that world, from that kingdom.
Morgana has two daughters and two sons. And, yes. And the two sons are at war with one another over a romantic situation. And Ransom, who we have to love, he has chosen, even though he's highly educated and could probably be doing something else, he's chosen to live in one of the encampments. And he's quite a character.
Thank you. He's based, you know, on some real people that I've known, people who did come from wealthy Savannah families and wound up living in the encampments, at least for a while. People who just, for whatever reason, in Ransom's case, he runs into a lot of legal trouble, and he's sent off to the Chatham jail for a year, and when he gets out, he just winds up living in an encampment. Well, that is not such a rare story as you might imagine in Savannah. There are a number of the scions of wealthy families who are living out in the camp.
We cycle through the points of view of numerous people in the story, but one of the primary ones, one of your central protagonists, is Jack. And she is really an amazing character, too.
Oh, thank you. Jack is the she is the daughter of Roxanne. Jack is black, and Roxanne has married Bibi, who is white, and who is Morgana's daughter. And so Jack, from her earliest childhood to Morgana Musgrove as her grandmother, and loves and adores her grandmother and respects her because her grandmother is brilliant, but also, like every other member of Morgana's family, there's a part of her that sort of loathes Morgana. And I think she sees Morgana for what she is. She sees that Morgana is a tissue of lies. And so there's a lot of sparks between those two. And that was the most fascinating thing for me, was Jack's relationship, first of all, with the city of Savannah, with this horrible, you know, with the evilness and viciousness of not only its history, but there's a lot of it in contemporary days too. But then Jack also, you know, she loves the city. It's beautiful. There's a sense of community, as I think you will find in very few cities. So Jack is also torn, but she's really torn about her grandmother. And that, I think, is the, you know, I think that's the real heart of this book.
Hmm. Morgana obviously has some nasty attributes, but I loved her. I like a character that's bad, and she was great. And we have characters in here who we initially think of as being pretty nice people, and a couple of them in particular, and I'm not going to go into any detail, they seem very nice, but they're really not.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I have always been fascinated by this notion of the whited sepulcher, of the people who are pure hypocrites. And I think I've always had, yeah, I love to explore that. The people who are the nastiest people are the most selfish.
Mm.
And they're the ones who are often present themselves as being loving and sweet and good. And that was the case, by the way. We talked about Charlie Lamar, Charles Augustus Lafayette Lamar. He believed himself to be a virtuous man. And so many of the leaders of the Confederacy talked about virtue, just talk and talk about virtue. And when you read the sermons that were being delivered in the 1850s in Savannah, it's just about, oh, they're just the most good people, and they're just such good Christians, and everything about them is good and loving, and they're just, and it's, you know, it's horrifying to read. But I think that's true in life. You know, it's still true. We look around, and the people who are holding themselves up as the most virtuous are the ones who are the most detestable.
Hmm. And is there still a subterranean system of tunnels beneath the city?
Yes, it's the old Savannah storm drains. They were built in the 1870s of brick. Sometimes there's three layers of brick, and there are these beautiful tunnels. You know, they... So a lot of them are just, you know, tunnels that are barely big enough to stand in. And then you come to these rooms, these sort of groins, where at the corners of the storm drain. And then they have these sort of giant vaulted rooms. And it's really amazing down there. I was able to go there years ago on a tour. They don't give tours anymore. They don't ever let anybody down in there, but there are still people who manage to find their way in, particularly homeless people, who will find an entrance, and then they go and live in the tunnels for a while. It's a little scary because if there's a big storm, those tunnels fill up with water quickly.
And are there actually doors on old buildings that lead to the tunnels?
There are, but I mean, we don't know because, well, all we have are, I don't know. I just know that I've been to a number of houses in Savannah where the owners will take you down to the basement and say that leads to a tunnel that leads down to the storm drain.
Oh.
It was, they were using these, the storm drains back in the 1920s to run rum during Prohibition.
Okay.
And because it was a really easy way, you could go through the storm drain and pop up in any neighborhood that you wanted to without having to encounter the revenue agent. So that became very popular during Prohibition.
How convenient.
Yeah.
My guest is George Dawes Green. His new novel is The Kingdoms of Savannah. Wasn't your dad a novelist?
My dad was mostly a short story writer. He wrote fantasy stories, and he became, I mean, even now, I every now and then encounter someone who just finds my dad. His name was Robert M. Green, Jr., and he won some Nebula Awards way, way back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He loved writing stories. He was, as you might imagine, he was very slow. So he might produce a new story every year. And, you know, he had other work. But those stories are considered, I mean, they're just jewels. He was just a brilliant man. And he was married to my mom, who was, you know, a pure Georgian. She just, you know, she thought Savannah was her capital city. But my dad was from Ohio, from Cincinnati, Ohio, and he didn't buy into any of the Confederate narrative, and so that was always this big strain in our household when I was growing up, because my mom was, you know, completely obsessed with the myth of Big Inez and the plantations and that plantation world. And my dad thought it was evil.
Mm.
And I think I quickly bought into my dad's view, which is why I put my thumb out and hitchhiked away.
Okay. George, a couple months ago, I covered a book on this program about the moth, how to tell a story, and I interviewed Jennifer Hickson, and I mentioned to her that I was looking forward to the Kingdoms of Savannah coming out so I could interview you again, because we'd done some interviews in the past, and she got really excited about that. Before I let you go, tell us a little bit about the moth. Jennifer speaks very highly of you. She said she was working on a story with you.
Yeah, she was actually working on the story of the young woman who eventually became the inspiration for Morgana.
Oh.
And I told that story in Seattle about a month and a half ago. And it should come out on the radio before long. It's one of my favorite stories, and I think one of Jen. You know, I've been working with Jen now for 25 years. So the moth started about 25 years ago. And Jen came on maybe, you know, after when we were a year or two old. But I just have loved Jen Hickson from the moment I met her. She runs the SLAM program and was doing that, you know, for years in New York. I was showing up every week for these. You know, the moth slams are where folks, and we have slams all over the country. I think there's about 28 different slam programs now where people will just show up, you put your name in a hat, people will tell 5-minute stories, and then there are scores for your stories, and it's usually a very raucous atmosphere. And gosh, those things have been just a huge hit from the very first slam. There were big lines. I remember for the first slam, there was a line going around the block, and there's still lines going around the block for people to get in. And I just spent some time recently talking with Jennifer about the first folks who came to slam, and it was so moving to be with her because she loved stories, and she's one of the most interesting, one of the sweetest people I've ever known.
Well, George, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. This is our third interview in 27 years, and I hope I don't have to wait another 9 or 10 years to talk to you again, but if I do, it'll be worth it.
Okay. I hope that we're still here.
I hope so, too.
I do, and thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, George. You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. The new one by George Dawes Green is The Kingdoms of Savannah. And thanks for listening, because listening is the most important thing. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.